start the meeting within 10 minutes, whether the media is here or not. No, it's scheduled for 10, but we give people time to drink water and to settle down, and we normally come late, and then we give the journalists time, but within 10 minutes we start the meeting. Welcome to everybody. Today I think people can sigh with relief. We've had a very hectic 2 weeks, at least for me, I don't know for everybody else. But Jean was telling me outside that she feels burnt out. We've dealt with 10 reports and amendment bills in under difficult conditions, 10 interviews in the last 3 weeks. I feel tired myself. I mean, I'm completely new and just really running full speed from the word go. But the members have been very kind. We have the full team of the post office, members of the board, and the members of the administration. Welcome to all of you. This is the first time I'm seeing, I think, all of you. I had the opportunity of meeting with the chairperson at least a few weeks ago, but it was just an informal courtesy meeting. Thank you for the time that you've given me. I meet the doctor more often than I meet you. That's the chairperson's husband. Every time we get stranded at the airport, he's there. Somehow he's sitting at the same table where I'm having coffee. So we talk about everything. He gave me a crash course on broadband and all these things. He was very good, actually. He was able to present it in a simple way that I actually understood. So thank you for that also. Let me hand over to you. You can just introduce your team. Do your presentation on your annual report. We prefer if the presentations are short so that we have more time for questions and for engagement. And then if there's any other matter you wish to raise, it's fine also. Over to you.
Okay. Good morning, Mr. Chair. Well, it's been delegated to me. Good morning, Mr. Chair, honorable members. Just briefly to introduce the chairperson. The team of the Southern Post Office. We are led by our chairperson, Ms. Vuyo Mahlathi. Then we also have another board member, so we have two board members here. Mr. Malebo is sitting over there next to the chairperson. Then, of course, to my right is Mr. Nick Duke, our chief financial officer. And then on the other side is Ms. Mariki Lancaster, group executive strategy. And next to her is our MD of Post Bank, Ms. Tutsi Manuela Campbell. And then next to Tutsi is our head of HR, Ms. Humaira Chunara, then followed by the head of mail, Mr. Yanras Ramakotsi, and next to him is the MD of the Korean Freight Group, Mr. Malepe Matide. Then at the end is Mr. Roger Petra, the senior manager, government relations and parliamentary liaison. Thank you. Over to you. Thank you.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee on Communications. It gives us a great pleasure as the Post Office to come and present the results that we are very proud of. We know that you're saying that you are tired, it's been a long, but we believe that it's always good to leave the best for last, because we truly believe and proudly believe that what we have come up with as this team and all the people of the Post Office is something to be proud of. We're saying this specifically because of where we come from. And I'd like to just start with this brand, the Post Office brand, because we proudly recently, only last week, have been participant in a nomination which we managed to make of the super brands of South Africa, with the Coca-Colas and others. So we're proudly South African with the bigger brands, the super brands of South Africa. So we're very proud of this brand because it is one of our major strategies in terms of stabilizing the Post Office, the brand recovery. So we're very grateful that whatever it takes, we continue to be the brand of South Africa. We'll just take you through. I know that the Honourable Chairperson is saying, you know, we shouldn't come up with a lot of slides. We'll try. We've got lots of slides, but we won't speak to all of them, Chair. And if it gets to a point where you want to cut us, please feel free to do so. We came here and we presented to the Portfolio Committee our vision, mission, and strategy. And that vision basically was about us being recognized as the top 10 providers of postal and related services worldwide. We're excited because, you know, this builds on the gains thus far, because we've moved from being over 100 in terms of rating of the Universal Post Union as far as revenue is concerned, to being 14 worldwide, number 14. So we do believe that when we put that being, say, top 10 recognized, it's very close. And the way our results are moving, we know it will get there. Because today we're not only just bringing you the annual results as we are requested, we're also giving you the taste of our interim results. Because also this annual report that we're presenting today, we also proudly present an annual report which we presented to the JSE to be critiqued as amongst other listed companies in this country. And we're very proud to say that we've been awarded the best annual report in terms of state-owned enterprises this year by the Journal Sex of Exchange. And all of these efforts are basically moving us from an inward-looking organization, and more specifically with the challenges that we've had as far as corporate governance is concerned, to begin to say to South Africa, look at the efforts, so that we should focus people on the efforts. We know what we've gone through, but let us begin to work together to make this organization the organization that the world has recognized, and we believe we have more to offer. So that talks to our mission in terms of us enabling relations to efficiently connect with the world, and that is something that we'll be talking to. The strategic themes deal with some of our major challenges of the organization in terms of driving operational excellence. Whilst we present the efforts and all the hard work, we recognize that the issue of customer service continues to be an issue that we are grappling with as an organization. And as part of that, we have done more because we're very proud. We realize in terms of the pillars that gives you operational excellence, dealing with also corporate governance issues, the conditions of employment, including the infrastructure. We've done a lot in terms of improving all those, but we are still recognizing that there are behavioral patterns that continue to undermine our services. So our focus at this stage is human resource development to deal with those. So these, in terms of being the government preferred partner, we've got a lot to report on that. We've done a lot in terms of the various government departments, partnerships with housing, partnerships with social development, partnership with transport, and even lately, we'll be reporting more on. From the year that we're reporting on, we're very proud that we've managed to shift the focus. But what we also, honorable members, are recognizing as part of this route is that we are as good as our partner. Post office is a conduit. The post office does not originate the work in terms of the service. So if your partner is not efficient, then you are also not going to be efficient. So what we are doing as part of this is to say more and more, let us work together to make sure that we understand the value chain from a supply chain. Who starts what and where? And what is the timeline in terms of the delivery of that so that we from our side can also deliver a good product? And this is not just for public sector as well. We're recognizing it also within the private sector that it becomes an issue that we're cautious upon to the point that we're not as excited every time we even get NGOs coming to us and say, can we use your distribution to deliver food parcels? And we say, you know what the problem is? Whilst we're reaching the poorest of the poor, the problem is if that food parcel doesn't reach that home, they'll say the post office didn't feed me today. And in the meantime, you wouldn't have delivered that post office to us. So we're just highlighting some of the issues as we continue to position ourselves. The people around the table, honorable members, represent the post office in its entirety and diversification. the mail, logistics, retail, and the post bank as a business, and also the cross-cutting services that continue to be our focus in terms of operational efficiency to make sure that these deliver. The mail business is basically the heartbeat of the post office, with 66% of our revenue coming from mail. But also, it is through the mail that we have pushed the operational excellence, because at this point, we've managed, I mean, on a daily basis, 6 million items are delivered from the post office. And this has pushed our efficiency to about 93%, which is part of a global standard. But we are having a target of 96%. So we are hoping that we'll be pushing more and more to get to that target. And more as well, we're seeing the improvement. The logistics has been the baby that we've been struggling within the organization, but we're seeing a turnaround, and Nick will talk a lot to that, as well as the other areas of retail and post-bank. Post-bank, let me also proudly say, we're very excited in terms of the gains of the accounts and the diversification that we've been experimenting on, that we're seeing that our products that the public is beginning to get excited about in terms of the uptake, to the point that as far as Mzansi accounts are concerned, we are leading at 41% in terms of the market share, far ahead of the commercial banks, which just shows the benefit of the footprint of the post office. We do with our mandate very broadly, because a lot of what we do, the strategy is about trying to make sure that we deliver on our shareholder mandate, which deals with the issue of the universal service. This is one area, again, we'll show the figures in terms of how much, in terms of what we've tried to do for universal service obligation, the outreach in terms of new post offices. We are pushing, I mean, the standard, global standard, is about one post office to about 10,000 inhabitants. We are sitting at 1 to 14,000. We're trying to push as far as the number, but let us understand that in a developing economy like ours, where within SADC, SAPOA, Mr. Kupu serves there, the current standard is 1 to 50,000 average. And in Africa, in some country, is 1 to 95 at this point. So basically, we're doing very well. We're actually even better in some cases than some of the developed countries. But this has a lot to do with the infrastructure. For instance, even when we have the resources that we have, because our focus now is how to invest the surplus into USO obligations. But you can roll out the post office if you don't have water, if you don't have electricity, if you don't have the roads, even if your intentions are good, it will delay you. So what we're doing now is work very closely more and more with the ESCOMs and the others to make sure that we're aligning our priorities, because we'll be able to deal with these very efficiently as we work together. And we're very excited with the fact that that is improving quite a lot. And the rollout of our addresses also is one area that we believe is going to assist us in moving. What is even good about the rollout of the addresses is that it's showing that the development imperative can also be a bottom line benefit. Already the revenue, the results that Nick will be showing, that from the addresses 1.9 million, I think that was rolled out in the previous financial year, we've managed to already see the benefit of revenue accruing out of that up to 4-5%. So what it shows is that the more we roll out, it's not just a good thing to do. It also makes business sense, and it also contributes to the mainstreaming to the economy of specifically people who've been marginalized. We also, I mean, as part of the whole issue is we're dealing with is the focus on corporate governance. I'm very proud of the board that has been basically working together with the executives to say that we've done our bit. We came at a time that has been very, very challenging in terms of the issues of corporate governance specifically, but we've done our bit to ensure that we stabilize the organization first and foremost, focus it in terms of corporate governance issues, restructuring the board, making sure that we've got a skill mix that will ensure that we also, for instance, for the first time, we shift the board committees are dealing with subsidiaries. Mr. Malebu, who's with me today, is chairing one of our subsidiaries, DocEx. We've got also somebody, one of our chairs, Ms. Pokane, chairing the CFG. And this ensures that we've got board members participating at all levels in terms of our fiduciary duty and monitoring and strategic guidance to make sure that we first and foremost understand, be able to guide and monitor what happens. We, however, have challenges, and before I hand over to Nick to deal with the financial statements, just want to, as part of what we have done, we've restructured the board committees, we've improved on the efficiencies between ourselves and the executives in terms of areas around procurement, recruitment policies, focus on the improvement of the human resource committee of the board, which used to be called Human Resource Review. We've actually focused now into being a human resource development and transformation, because we've recognized that part of the problems we're dealing with are linked to transformation that has not been handled efficiently from our side. So those are some of the areas, that, and also the risk side has also improved. What was done following the forensic report of the Susan Taluba was to actually recognize with discussion with the shareholder that there is more that we're having to understand in terms of what is endemically wrong with the post office. So as part of this, we commissioned a corporate governance review to guide us as to where, in terms of systems and controls, where are the issues that we are having to look at. So the report that we basically commissioned was to look at what happened from the beginning in terms of 1991, when the post office stopped being a government department to being SAPO Limited in terms of the initial commercialization. And what we see around the era is that, to a great extent, we're still grappling with the problems of the post office that was piggybacking on Telkom, cross-subsidized by Telkom, and having to stand as its own, and with the infrastructure and bed facilities being taken over by Telkom, and us having to deal with the poor facilities that we are having to build, continue to build on. So there are quite a number of areas that we're drawing from the past, which basically we believe that, as part of that is the era of the strategic management partner in the name of the New Zealanders, and what the issues that we're drawing out of. So all these are saying to us, we've come a long way. We understand the background of where we're coming from. We had staffing of 33,000 people in 1991, and we're sitting into where we are now, 2007, with 17,700 people. And these included the incorporation of the TBZ state. Why am I raising this? In terms of the customer service that we're still grappling within the other areas, is the management of these inclusions, and also the reduction in numbers that we are needing to look at and see from a transformation and human resource development. How do we bring structural cohesion within the organization that is as diverse as we are? When you look at that retail outlet, with your post-bank product, with your logistics product, with your mail product, how do you make sure that you've got the kind of right staffing? That is a challenge that we present to you in terms of what we do. So, in summary, we're bringing to you our results, and these results basically recognize the gains that as an organization we've managed to consolidate in terms of what has happened, but also building on the challenges and failures facing back in terms of the initial commercialization of the post office and the failure of the strategic management partner to effect the turnaround. It also recognizes, you know, the introduction and improvement on the shareholder mandate to the board, and the introduction and promulgation of the PFMA, that all these have yielded positive results, and also that we are talking about the results that we're talking about, recognizing that we're coming from a background where SAPO had an operating loss of 865 million in 2001. And what we're presenting to you now is that SAPO has come a long way. So let's understand and put into context all these issues, because we are now very excited about the 48.6 million in terms of the results that we'll be presenting to you right now, which will be presented by our CFO, Nick Buick. So I hand over to Nick to present the results. Thank you so much.
Thank you, and good morning, everybody. Honorable Chairperson, honorable members, and thank you for the opportunity to present the results of the organization. I will dwell a little bit, and I'll go through the numbers and relatively quickly, so as not to bore you, but I think they do tell a story. So I will be dwelling on some key financial indicators from the organization for 2006-2007, and also looking at our interim results, which we just finalized now for the 6 months to September. So it'll give you some idea in terms of how the organization is performing in the current financial year. I'll also dwell a little bit on the non-financial numbers, because I think, as the chairperson has said, it's getting that balance right between our universal service obligation, but also being commercially viable is a unique challenge which we face. And I think I'll dwell a little bit on the non-financial numbers as well. But really, our key effort really is in our infrastructure, and we now have over 2,600 outlets. 51% of them in rural, so designated rural areas, and 49% in more urban areas. And our challenge for us is how we can actually improve that to the 1 in 10,000, which we've been talking about. And I'll talk a little bit more in detail about our capital expenditure program planned for the next few years. In the 2006-2007 financial year, we actually introduced 47 new post offices, mainly in rural areas, and 48 outlets relocated. We also rolled out 1.9 million new addresses. I think we've alluded to the fact that it is also a commercial opportunity for us to actually improve the addresses. Studies have actually revealed that in emerging markets such as ours, as we provide addresses and people can actually receive mail and send mail and post, it actually stimulates the economy. And we're seeing that, I think we're seeing that in our numbers as well. I think one of the challenges we've mentioned is how we diversify our revenue. You know, the post office has traditionally been relying very much on mail volumes. We know historically, worldwide, they have actually been declining, or at least staying flat. And I think, this trend will eventually impact South Africa as well. And I think we have an opportunity now to restructure and diversify into other revenue streams. And we're putting a lot of effort into that. We've introduced e-postal solutions. Those of you know that you can actually now pay for your renew your post box online, so if you haven't done so, please go into our website and have a look. It's very functional. In a few months' time, we will be introducing renewal of payment of traffic fines online, and we also now renew motor vehicle licenses in the Eastern Cape. Those post offices in the Eastern Cape, you can now renew your motor vehicle licenses. So really focusing on our mandate in terms of government, providing services for government and to government. We can now do super collections. I think we are the channel of choice when it comes to the BEE environment with regard to shared schemes, IPOs and that. We've been involved in very successful schemes in 2006, 2007. There was if you remember, the Media 24, the multi-choice, the Tumanati BEE share scheme, which was oversubscribed many times. And now in the current year, we've actually just recently completed the Asongi share scheme offer, which is the MTN shares on behalf of the NEF, also very, very successful. We've also looked at other savings opportunities. It's not only the Post Bank that we promote, but other organizations as well. Those of you know, you can actually buy treasury bonds through our outlets. And also, as the new metros actually look at investing and collecting funds for investment infrastructure in those areas, the metro retail bonds are now becoming popular, and we've assisted the Johannesburg Metro and very, very successfully in rolling out the retail bonds through our outlets. In terms of the significant non-financial achievements for 2006-2007, we've bucked the trend worldwide in that our mail volumes have actually increased by 7%. And I think if you look at worldwide postal revenues, they increased by about 3%. So that shows that we are improving our mail volumes mainly on the back of what has been a very, very strong economy. And we're seeing that the benefit of that, although our salespeople tell me they've also played a role in improving our revenue. Our delivery standards way up there, 92%, and the challenge, as we say, is to get them up around about 95%. And our head of mail, I'm sure, will be able to tell a little bit more detail on that. On the supply chain side, we've done a lot of work in reviewing and streamlining our procurement policies and procedures. I think governance is very, very important. At the same time, they need to be efficient, and we don't need to have bottlenecks. There's a lot of drive on us to make these necessary investments in the environment. So we need to have key controls, but at the same time, these procedures need to be efficient. We've used our spending to enhance our BBBEE, And over 50% of our discretionary spending, 630 million rand, has been spent on broad-based economic empowerment companies. We've done a lot of work in the SME, and we are happy to say that we don't just rest on the laurels that we are government-owned, but we've had been accredited from a BE perspective with EmpowerLogic. The other area of key growth is the post-bank or financial services business. We've seen a 21% growth in accounts to 4.6 million now over the last financial year, and it's particularly on the Mzansi side where we've been very successful, 78% growth in Mzansi accounts to 1.5 million accounts. I think we've mentioned that before, that we are the leader, market leader in that particular account. Our post-bank capital, our post-bank book has grown since we put the, I'll show the numbers in a little bit more detail on this now, but since we put the controls in place, ring-fencing the depositors' funds, we've seen year-on-year double-digit growth in our balance sheet in terms of the funds under management from our investors. And as I say, 74% growth in Mzansi, and we've introduced debit card facility. Those with post-bank accounts can now use debit cards, which will bring down the need for cash in our society with all the challenges that brings. I'd like to dwell a little bit on the annual report because I think that's what we're about today. But I think the annual report really tells a story, and it really is a reflection in terms of what we have achieved. This is the fifth consecutive year that the organization has received an unqualified audit report from our auditors. Those of you around at the time may know that we had a series of unqualified and disclaimed audit reports 5 to 6 years ago. We have now got to the stage where we expect an unqualified audit report. Unfortunately, we've been able to maintain that. We also looked at benchmarking ourselves internationally, and we actually decided to convert to International Financial Reporting Standards, IFRS, which was a major exercise. We did that down in 2005, 2006, so we are fully compliant for International Reporting Standards, which enables us to benchmark ourselves against other postal operators worldwide, and indeed the JSC-listed companies. As the chairperson has said, we were rated number 14 by the Universal Postal Union in terms of financial performance in 2005-2006. We've also done a lot of work in restructuring our balance sheet. A few years ago, we were technically insolvent, where our liabilities exceeded our assets by some billion rand, and we now sit in a situation where we have reserves of some 1.2 billion rand. So a very, very strong balance sheet, which I think will enable us to use that as the engine for driving the investments that we need to make going forward. And the chairperson has alluded to it, but we did win the annual report award for 2006-2007, first prize for the state entity category. That was granted by the Johannesburg Stock Exchange and also the Institute of Chartered Company Secretaries for Southern Africa. So we're very, very proud of that. I did mention the fact that we have shown growth, number 14, and that was up from 101 in terms of our UPU rating in 2003-2004, up from 81 at 2004-2005, and then to number 14 in the 2005-2006 year. Not quite in the top 10 yet, but we're getting there. Now, just to summarize the financial performance of the organization for 2006-2007, group operating profit, group trading profit was up 85% to 470 million rand, of which obviously the post office itself contributes the bulk of it to 51%. I think very encouraging well was the turnaround that we experienced in our courier business, which is the courier and freight group, which effectively represents the brand XPS, Speed Services Couriers PX. We saw, although a small loss, that was up from 55 million rand loss in 2005-2006, and the year before that 90 million. So you can see that the turnaround is gathering steam in the courier business. And DocX very, very much operates in a niche market, a very, very good business, and generated a very, very small profit, but a significant one in terms of its revenue of 9 million rand. As I say, the trading profit was at 470. Profit before tax was up 59% to 507 million, up from 319 million rand last year. And then revenue up by 9%, so we've hit the 5 billion rand mark, so significant revenue growth. And when you think that our tariff increases is around about 4.6%, the revenue growth of 9 shows that we're actually increasing our volumes and also diversifying the revenues in terms of our strategy. I think the secret for the performance of the organization has been tight cost control. We've continued to deliver that. I think for the fourth or fifth year now, our expenses have been below inflation, and we hope to see that continue. And I think if you look at the major drivers of our costs being fuel in terms of our fleet and people, and salary and wage settlement have been higher than inflation, I think to keep the expense increase in that financial year to 5% has been an achievement. I won't, that's just the detailed income statement. I won't dwell too much on that because the actual numbers have been in the previous slide, but just to show that the profit after tax has increased by 26% for 2006 to 2007. And unfortunately, now we are profitable, we have to pay tax, so we have a tax provision of 236 million and 155 million rand in 2006 to 2007. The Courier and Freight Group, I mentioned, that has been a significant turnaround there. Profit before tax has actually gone, sorry, the loss before tax has actually improved from 58 million to 7 million, which is an 88% increase, decrease in losses. So we are seeing a turnaround there, as I mentioned. And Jockex, as I mentioned, was sitting at around about 9 million rand profit. On the balance sheet side, just very, very quickly, total assets have grown from 205, 206 to 6.9 billion rand, which is a 21% improvement on prior year. And just really just drawing your attention to the capital and reserves, which has grown by 41% from 873 million to 1.2 billion. That's mainly on the back on the growth of our cash and cash equivalents driven by Postbank, which has performed very well. Lastly, on the cash flow, you can see that cash flow has been very, very positive for 2006-2007. Operating cash generated was 792 million rand generated by operations, up from 248 million the year before. We had an increase in deposited funds of 306 million from Postbank. This enabled us to make investments in CapEx of 160 million. We received 350 million rand from government, and that which actually contributes to our total increase in cash and cash equivalents of 1.2 billion rand for the year. Just to look at some trends, I think it's important to show the trends that this has not been a one-year wonder. We have shown consistent growth and improvement. If you look at our profit margin, which is looking at the operating profit of the organization against its revenue, has improved from a minus 4% in 2003 to 9%, and shown year-on-year growth over the last 4 to 5 years. We're looking at trying to do double-digit profit margins the current financial year. I think it's very, very important that we do generate these surpluses to actually drive the investments that we need to make in infrastructure. Return on assets has also shown the same improvement from minus 7 in 2003 to plus 7 in 2007. And as you can see, all the key ratios are showing positive trends. Our costs are actually going the right way, going down, when we compare those to our revenue. Trading profits, the history, we know 2003, 2004, we made our first profit of 27 million. And as the chair has mentioned, we are actually now at 470 million. That's a growth of 85% on 205, 206. Depositors funds, this is the area where we put a lot of work into improving our control environment, putting key controls every day. There's a settlement of any funds that is actually transferred in our post office. We actually have daily settlements where we transfer any additional investments on a daily basis to Postbank. So those, the bank gets in the benefit of those funds, and they're invested in terms of our treasury policy. We recently just received a full treasury audit from National Treasury, which came out very, very positive from a result perspective. So treasury operations performing well in the organization. Total assets on the balance sheet side, as I say, going up, growth of 21% to 6.9 billion. Cash and cash equivalents up 39% to 4.6 billion. So again, a lot of improvement in the cash and cash management side. And then the post office itself, if you back out the Post Bank, which, as I said, was a major contributor, the post office itself has actually shown 114% growth in its cash balances and investments to 1 billion for the year. Revenue as a percentage of expenses is obviously showing a positive trend as well. And then finally, on the current year, really looking at, I talked about diversifying the revenue. 66% of the total post office group revenue is still driven by the mail business, so still substantial. Although we have seen increasing trends on courier, which is now 14%, and financial services, which is 18%. We would like to see that proportion grow as we drive those businesses over the coming years. Capital expenditure for the 2006-2007 year was 301 million. Two big areas, and that will continue to be the trend. Property infrastructure, 150 million, and IT infrastructure, 135 million. It's probably around about a 60-40% investment split between physical infrastructure, growing the number of outlets and our presence, and investing in systems. We've made some significant investments in systems this year. We're currently implementing a new point-of-sale system across all of our outlets, and 2 months ago we completely re-implemented our SAP system. And I'm happy to say that it's gone well. I think it was one of the biggest re-implementations in the country, and I think we're one of the biggest users of the new SAP, MySAP system in the country now. And I think it's gone very, very successfully. Talking a little bit about subsidy, as you're aware, we still do receive targeted funding from government of around about 350 million rand per annum. And this gives you some idea in terms of what it's been used for. 100 million goes to funding our universal service obligation, so that's where we maintain outlets in rural areas or deliver mail into remote locations. We have 50 million rand set aside in this current, in the last financial year for mail centres. The IT systems improvements, which I mentioned, 163 million, and then the property infrastructure of 125 million. That gives you some idea, and unfortunately we have to pay VAT on our subsidy received, so that is another 43 million rand for the current financial year. Just briefly looking at 2007-2008, that's the year we're currently in, just to give you a feel for where we are at the moment. We will continue to drive the performance of the organization financially. We are projecting a 17% improvement in trading profit for the current year and a top-line revenue growth of another 7%. So as we diversify into the other businesses, we would hope to see that growth ahead of inflation as we move forward. The big challenge for us is to make the investments that we need to make. Our board has approved a budget of 922 million rand for investments, mainly on property and IT infrastructure, 542 million in property and 326 million rand in IT. The other area which we will be making investments in, as I'm sure you will know, is people. We are putting in a massive training program for our retail staff to improve performance at a retail level, and also to look at enhancing, as we mentioned, our customer service, customer intimacy, to actually train our staff significantly in terms of the products that we handle and the way they interact with customers. On the corporate governance side, the chairperson has mentioned a lot of that, and the shareholders' mandate, so I won't dwell on that, but those continue to be a focus for us in 2007-2008. And if I look at the financial outlook for 2007-2008, our projections for the current financial year are operating profit of around about 550 million rand. That's up from the 470 million last year. So a projected 17% growth in profits for the new financial year. And then, as I say, we have a capital expenditure projection of 890 million. Moving forward, we've talked about this before, that we need to make the investments, particularly from when the days when we didn't have sufficient funds. Now that we have the investment, we need to make it. We need to play catch-up in terms of the legacy that we have inherited. As we mentioned, when the company was corporatized, we really were the poor cousin. And I think it's taken us to this stage where we've actually been able to generate sufficient funds to make the investments. But we believe that for the next 3 to 4 years, around about 800 to 900 million will need to be spent on improving our infrastructure, physical, and then IT as well. And as I mentioned, we have investments of 800 to 900 million, of which 60%, or approximately 60%, will be on physical infrastructure and 35% on IT. Making 100%. So significant investment needed in capital expenditure going forward. How are we going to fund this is the question. We do have subsidies projected for the next 3 years, 319 million in 2007-2008, 326 in 2008-2009, and then 336 million in 2009-2010. And you can see that cash generated from operations from our own profitability is around about 500 to 600 million. So it gives us available funds around about 1.5 billion, which is sufficient to actually manage that investment. I think the challenge in what happens, I know we're having discussions at board level in terms of subsidy and our projections going forward. In the event that there is any change to that, obviously we'll need to manage our balance sheet and use our balance sheet to actually finance our investments going forward. So we've actually projected borrowings around about 250 to 200 million from 2010 to 2011, which is very, very manageable by company standards. Just briefly then to close, I thought I'd just share with you the interim results. These are the results for the first 6 months of the new financial year ending September 2007. Trading profit has improved by 40%. On the same period last year to 284 million. Net profit has improved by 20 Total assets have improved by a further 5% to 7.2 billion rand, and cash and cash equivalents have increased by 9% to 4.9 billion. So the positive trend has been reflected in our results. They're not audited, but we have every reason to believe they are accurate. And then the subsidy that we've actually used year to date, if we look at the amount utilized for the first 6 months of the financial year, we have spent 34 million rand on universal service obligations, 43 million rand on systems improvements, and 13 million rand on IT infrastructure. We're giving a VAT of 22 million. That gives you 113 million rand that we spent year to date from subsidy. And if we look at the non-financial numbers, so the achievements for the first 6 months, we've rolled out in India 1 million new addresses in the current financial year. We've opened 15 new post offices, and we've upgraded 11. Our delivery standards maintained above the 90%, but I think the challenge for us as those volumes increase is going to be more and more difficult to achieve those challenges. And I know the mail people are working very, very hard to make sure that we don't slip there. We've done a lot of work, particularly in the retail side, of actually, I know the question has been raised here before, is the number of casuals in our retail offices. We've done a lot of work in looking at the ratio of permanent staff to casual staff in the retail organization, obviously balancing the mandate of actually improving the number of permanent staff, but at the same time managing our costs as well. We've actually done a lot of work in that area, and we're rolling out and improving, actually increasing the number of permanent staff members in our retail outlets. And obviously, we've talked about the financial sustainability. I think in conclusion, I think that just really summarizes. I hope I haven't gone too fast, Mr. Chairman. And I'd like to hand over to the chairperson to conclude. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Nick. I think in conclusion, we just reiterate the fact that we have come a long way, and we really are thanking the support of specifically the portfolio committee, because in reporting back during the tough times, we've been supported in terms of going forward. And at this point, we believe that our challenges are being turned into opportunities, because what we have done is to make sure that we understand specifically the challenges that we are having to deal with. And through our investments specifically in terms of technology as well as the people, we believe that we'll be able to crack the issues, as well as beginning to deal with the regulatory changes that we are having to face within our environment. We also, I mean, with the Company Act that affects us currently and the bill that has come through, we realize that there are a lot of areas from our side that we are having to deal with in terms of harmonizing our regulatory framework. And to this effect, we are working with the Department of Communications in terms of the review of the Articles of Association to ensure that we deal with our regulatory environment in a proper way. So all these areas that have been presented here show that we are on board, we're working very hard, and most of all, we've worked with the Communication Workers Union to make sure that together we come up with a strategy to deal with the areas of transformation, areas of people, as well as intensifying the anti-corruption drive. And together we formed a joint task team with the Communication Workers Union, which is at this point going through an organizational health check, which actually defines the guidelines for transformation as well as the anti-corruption going forward. So we believe that all these things have been possible because of the partnerships that we have, and we will continue in terms of brand positioning and creation of a sustainable growth and value going forward. Thank you. And at this point, we have circulated copies of the presentation, but also a link attached to that, I would like to believe, are questions that were previously asked by members of the portfolio committee. We try to deal with them in detail. So if there are any further questions, we would be open at this point. Thanks so much, Chair.
Thank you very much for the presentation. It's good that you've got the previous question, so we don't recycle the same question. All right, members, it's open. Yeah, are you going to recycle the question? But didn't your researcher give you a new question for this year?
I have asked every year since you started trying a profit whether we couldn't curtail the subsidy. And I think it is important to ask it every single year. It will expire in 2010, I see. but would you just like to give us the annual update on why you deserve the $300 million, please? And then the other question I also usually ask is your breakdown of where the subsidy money went, which is intended for universal rollout. It always contains a few other items, such as, in this case, systems improvement to the tune of $160 million. Would you just like to justify why that sits under, appropriately sits under the subsidy? And the question I'm sure everyone wants to ask, it was very interesting and entertaining to see the Department of Home Affairs complaining about the post office and saying that they would now be withholding business from you. Let me ask the question absolutely neutrally. The chairperson made certain remarks at the beginning, which I suspect pertained to this issue, but would you like to comment on the fact that Home Affairs says post office has now failed them so badly in certain areas they're not, no longer going to use post office? And just lastly, would you just like to update us on the situation with the former CEO? We had a meeting with you during which you gave us quite a lot of confidence that no further action and so forth would follow. Would you just perhaps update us there?
Deputy, sir. Jefferson, thank you. I'm trying not to recycle the questions. So I wasn't even aware of all the responses that are back. Sorry for that one. Exception, just sort of, I think I need to put it on the record that I have the fullest confidence in this current group that represents the post office. We worked with them quite a while, and I can see that they're trying the damage, they're trying hard to improve on that. So they have my support in terms of taking this post office forward. Some questions that I actually do still use, I'm asking now this question, as a client of the post bank, you still use my money to pay off post office. You know, at the time it was used, but never reported, and somehow we tripped over that fact that money was used to crop up the losses of the post office from the post bank. So you still use my money as a client of the post bank. Second chairperson, the question that Nick, you've reported, there was a steady decline in terms of restructuring of employment from 34,000 to 17,000. When do we see that bottoming out? In fact, turning it around where there should be a growth again. But around a business plan, you know, you just don't put more fat to it. When do we see that? Well, there's nothing more disturbing for it or demoralizing people. It's always the question about retrenchment or restructuring on the horizon, and it goes for everybody. Then, chairperson, my last question, I need to say thanks to Twix and Rhoda for the help they've given me, something that I had to post, and was about to be delayed. People was leaving to Ukraine, and I could call Twix, and literally overnight, it was delivered to the post office in the Rosedale. So the two of them, thank you very much. And particularly, and I had this exercise, and I'm going to confess it will be the last time I'm doing it. Last Thursday, I put in $50 in the envelope and posted it down to Rosedale. And yesterday, I collected the post office, the $50 still in there. I'm not going to do it again, but I think I'm running out of luck now. It might disappear, but I'm not going to do it again. So in terms of 2010, this morning on the radio news, I've heard that we're looking at an influx of about 10 million people at that time. And I can imagine if just half of them wants to make use of the post office, sending things all over the world. Will the post office be geared? Will they be ready to? But remember, it's going to be about 2 or 3 months that people want to send things off. Is the post office preparing themselves for that kind of rush to be able to do that? Listen, on page 17 of your report, you pay government accounts to certain retired employees, and it's like a massive amount. Can you just, I have quite a number of questions around that, but just take me through that. When will it end? It seems it's going on forever, all your profits going into paying those kind of accounts. Just talk to me, please. Thank you.
Can you hold for? Hold for? We've had quite a few questions, really. All right, we'll take next now.
Still with some of the questions, and Nick and the team would be able to deal with most of the questions. But I thank so much for the questions. I think if we go back to your subsidy, which you'll be talking to, but I just want to give the background to that, to indicate that first and foremost, the results that we're showing from the annual results of 2006-2007 to the interim results now do not include, in terms of the surplus that we're showing, the subsidy. That excludes the subsidy, hence the reporting of this subsidy outside. And we're not talking about the expiry of the subsidy. This is our proactive approach, madam, in terms of basically saying at this point we are getting this subsidy, but we are not hoping that over time we will be getting this. But we're sitting with a situation right now where the majority of the people are excluded. And in a normal urban environment, we arrive there, there are roads, there are addresses. But in a situation of underdevelopment in the remote areas, we, as the post office, we ended up taking the responsibility of what, I mean, government, in terms of all spheres, would be doing. Because the investment in addresses, with the systems that go into that, is an investment that we are making, because the whole address program starts from the beginning. I mean, if they were to explain how it goes, it's a very intense, that basically ensures that at the end of the day, that rondavel in that village has a number. We pay for those costs. So basically, it can be very difficult, because this is outside of our normal business, that we are having to contribute to a developmental state in the way that we're doing. And it is because of that we believe that we are still having to be assisted, because we have created this. And the good thing about it, we've just come back from Spain, and we presented this address program, Honorable Chair, and it was actually a GIS-based program that was basically applauded and in demand even in development in developed economies, because they have the remote areas that they're still having to deal with. And it is through this support that we have managed to do that. But I Nick will talk to the specifics. I just wanted to indicate that it is because of us being proactive to sort of look at the three-year horizon to say we still have to push. I indicated the number of addresses still we are having to deal with, because figures are showing us that, I mean, about 13 million people didn't have addresses in this country, and that is our contribution year by year. Last year we managed to push 1.9, the year before we also pushed another number. So basically we're managing to do our best, but it is through the subsidy that we're managing to, because it's part of the universal service obligation. The subsidy, you want to add something else?
No, actually, just to say that, I mean, your question about the IT, some of the IT spending, there is a USO element to the IT side. We bring a lot of our post offices online, particularly those in rural environments. We're putting in, as I mentioned, new point-of-sale systems. We want to put a PC in every post office, which you might think, well, that's normal. But a lot of our post offices don't have that technology, so we are spending money on that. We're also, some of the foundation and the embedded systems in the organization do have a universal service element, where a lot of the online requisitioning, a lot of our requisitioning to improve the efficiencies in our systems will be done online from now on. We're trying to get rid of all the paperwork. So particularly where people will need to have SAP access to the SAP system in a rural environment to actually raise these requisitions, and try and decentralize a lot of the requisitioning to those areas. We do put a lot of effort into making sure that the subsidy is used correctly. Just to put the Honourable Member's mind at rest, we do ask our auditors to specifically review the subsidy spending for the year, and we do get a separate report on that, a copy of which we get and a copy of which goes to the Department of Communications, just to make sure that we're actually making use of it correctly.
Thanks so much. So basically, it is through our proactive approach that we get in there and preparing ourselves. It's part of also the move from inward looking to look at how do we ensure that we're competitive. And that's part of that. But we also realize that we're having to be responsible. The issue around the Home Affairs, I would rather not comment much, in the sense that there was a reflection from the minister's side. In terms, I'm not sure whether you saw that the following day. Basically, I mean, she was indicating, because we had not actually had from our side that we were fired. We were actually very shocked when we saw that statement, and the following day it was indicated that, you know, that was not properly put into context. So, you know, from that side, yes, and actually it was indicated as well in terms of the role we played to move from a turnaround of 20 days to 9 days as part of the post office contribution. But we even taking further, because part of the issue is to look at how do we improve together with Home Affairs in terms of the because the service providers they were referring to were not even including the post office. They were including other areas, and part of the confusion around, I think the journalists didn't probably understand, because also they referred to with being done for FPS, which is our full subsidiary. So basically I think the facts were problematic around that story, and that in a sense was corrected the following day. But we also very proud to say that through the investment in IT with second phase, we can even push for what now they're talking about 48 hours. That is possible. And it's partly due to our investment in the IT that we can begin to deliver those. Update on previous CEO. As far as that story is concerned, as indicated, the contract was terminated based on his contract, which indicates that as you are stopped as a director by minister in terms of the board, you automatically terminate as a CEO. So basically what happened was initially the case was taken by him to the CCMA, and we participated in that, and the commissioner believed that from their side, because the issue is that we did not dismiss. Because at that point he was pushing for, you know, unfair dismissal. And we actually took the whole case with transcripts and included quite a number of senior counsels in this country to sort of comment on the case, and basically we got positives in terms of fairness and openness of the case. So at this stage he's not asking to be brought back. It's mainly an issue around compensation that we are sort of having discussion, he's pushing at this point. So we are basically waiting. The case might go to labor court, because his issue is around the compensation, but we'll see how we deal with that at the state. Our legal department is dealing with that. And then I'll get Nick to talk to the post bank and the use of depository funds.
Thank you. In response to the honourable member, no, the post bank, the post office is not using your money to fund its operation. We ring-fenced that several years back, from about 4 to 5 years ago. We put those controls in place very, very early on. And as the organisation has become profitable, there's obviously been no need anymore. But as I mentioned, the post bank investments have grown 15%. Year on year, which it wouldn't be doing if they were being used for any other purpose. So we do have very, very strict controls to make sure that that happens. I don't know, would the MD of Postbank like to say anything more?
The other thing that actually assists is the fact that on a daily basis we understand what deposits have been put in by our customers, and those funds, we would pay the post office on a daily basis what it is that we pay for retail, for transactors, because when you go to the post office, it costs the post office, and would pay for that, and on a daily basis, the funds will be swept into Treasury, and Treasury will invest those funds, because in some instances, you'll find that the funds that people are investing are not funds that they will require the next day, and will invest those, and the Treasury function actually sits within the corporate function of the post office, and I think we have people that are very able in that area that invest the funds on a daily basis. We don't invest the funds in risky environments. We actually invest the funds further to the commercial banks, and we have a clear rule in terms of how those funds should be invested to all the different institutions, so your money is safe.
Yeah, I can take here. I think first of all, I think there was a question on staff.
Mm-hmm.
We've come down from 32,000 to 17,000, and there has been a significant decline. There have been no forced retrenchments over that period. It's been through either an attrition basis or a voluntary retrenchment basis. And I think, I don't know whether Kimaira would like to add to it, but I think we've probably bottomed out in terms of staffing. In other words, our levels are now stable. And I think the challenge for us now is to retrain those existing staffing to our new business opportunities that we'll be pursuing, and hopefully, as our revenue grows, we can make investments into increasing staff numbers, but obviously on a business, on a commercial basis. Kimaira, would you like, anything you'd like to add?
Yeah, what I can add is that we've realized that on the operational side, we have very good skills, but there are a lot of strategic skills that we still need to bring into the organization. And also as we convert within retail especially, from the part-time employees and casuals, you'll see a significant growth. So we have about 1,000 positions that we're recruiting for within the retail business that we took in total. We're filling in 1.5 vacancies this year.
Just to answer the question on the telephone accounts, yes, it's true. We do pay telephone accounts for some retired staff. I think that was actually valued in the annual report of around about $9 million. And there's a charge to the income statement of around about R700,000 per annum. This was certain of our staff members, when they retired, had this benefit, to which they were legally entitled to. We had ring-fenced it, but obviously over time, as these people, over time this will decline. Nobody's entitled to the benefit anymore, so it has been ring-fenced. But we obviously report it, and we value it actuarially every year. The medical aid is different. I can talk to that if you want.
There are other questions, but also on the link with the business plan, honourable member, on the staff growth and stabilisation. We are working on that, the refinement of the business model linked to the business plan, because we recognise that the whole strategy around the human resource plan and development, because that also deals with the issue of rationalisation in terms of our subsidiaries, has to be driven by a clear business plan. So at this point, we're looking at the refinement of that, and we'll be presenting that when we come back next time, Honourable Chair. But also, the other issue that we're wanting to bring in terms of the preparedness for 2010, which I'm handing over to Nick.
Can I hand that one to Twix? I think Twix is actually responsible for the initiatives in that area and probably can give us a little bit more detail. Twix?
Thank you. With regard to 2010, we've been meeting with the local organizing committee, and there have been challenges in different areas. One, our ability to partner with them full scale has been quite prohibitive, because we needed to pay a lot of dollars, millions of dollars. But with regards to our strategy, we've realized that we need to first work with provincial governments and also local authorities in making sure that the service delivery is up to scratch. And we're having various meetings and series of meetings with the structures that are put in place to deliver the service. And again, in keeping with our postal outlet rollout and also the upgrading of our facilities, and I think, honorable members, we will be ready to be able to deliver whatever it takes when the 2010 is here.
Advocate Trout, Hosso Kumalo, and Suzanne Fox, in that order.
Sure, thank you. I've been covered to a large extent by some of the previous questions and even some of the answers coming, and I just want to start off, I've got some little things. Just to thank you for a briefing that's as professional as the way you function at the moment, it seems to me. I mean, sure, I really found a proper balance in the briefing in terms of what you put here, not the hour and a half, 2 hours, rambling on about slides and slides. What I heard was things I needed to know. Yeah. That was it. So thank you for that. So I've just got one follow-up. Well, I was about to ask that in future we do get some staff complement planning together with a business plan. That's important. But you already answered that. Chair, just back to the subsidies. You're getting annual subsidy from government from Treasury. This is carried forward. It's not utilized. It doesn't go back to Treasury. Now, I also and it's ring-fenced. Now, you plan to, I'm going to look at your projected cash flow. Now, you're planning for a 250 in 2010-11 and a 200 million in 2011-12 borrowing. Now, that will bring it back to this year's and already this last 6 months things. There's a lot of this money you're not utilizing. Now, if you carry all these things over, it may make the borrowing easier for you as a company, and that may make some good business sense if I can be very devious now. No, it may make good business sense to say, well, let's keep the subsidy. Don't use it. We don't need to report if we don't use it properly. We can carry it forward. Eventually, from a business point and shareholders' point of view, we get to a point where we have to borrow less with less financial cost to that because of the remnants of the subsidy still there. But if you do that, I'm not saying you're doing that. I'm just trying to be devious. But if you do that, you will not fulfill your universal service obligation. That's my concern here. I mean, in this year under review, in terms of model centers, there were 50 million subsidy, nothing used. Just after this last 6 months thing, it's now 80 million, still nothing used. I'm just concerned about the way that it doesn't seem that there are any real indicators or forcings or something to ensure that you utilize this money. And I don't know how we can deal with that. Just give me some further indications as to why are these things being carried forward. Is it lack of capacity that you're not able to roll it out, or is the subsidy not properly attuned to your business plan for a specific year, which would then cause, of course, that it wouldn't be in sync? Or what would be the problem there? And then, Jed, just last question. You are now within a specific relationship with ICASA after the ECA came into place and so on. You didn't say anything about that. I just would like to know, in this last year, since the last time we've seen you, what's going on there with ICASA and requirements and those things, just from your perspective. I will close, Chair, with a remark about Home Affairs. And the funny thing, we all laughed when we saw it. Not laughed for the claim that you're about to be fired or you're being fired, but laughed at the audacity of even such a remark. I actually think that Home Affairs should rather ask you please not to fire them. If you look at the performance of you versus them. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. I wish I could share the excitement and the congratulatory remarks by my colleague Randy Pitarse. Unfortunately, his congratulations are more based on personal assistance he has received from the post office. Chairperson, there is a... Between Mr. Buick and the chairperson and Mr. Twig, there is supposed to be a person by the name of this Monsanity Lefoka, the Chief Operating Officer, who's actually the acting Chief Executive Officer. And then there was no explanation why she's not. I'm not saying. And my questions now will then show you that once the chairperson and the CFO answer and then the CEO is not around, you would have to close that gap. And I'm actually now going to make it to that. That gap. And Chair, it will also be important for us to know exactly how far is the process of appointing a new CEO. It has been almost a year now, and whether does that case of Mr. Mampoul has any bearing on the appointment process. And if you have to also link that also with the previous CEO before Mr. Mampoul, Mr. Manda Manyache, he was threatening to sue the post office or government or Mr. Mampoul an amount of 100 million or 200 million. I'm not so sure, because last time when we asked you, you said it appears that you are going to pursue him. Mr. Manyasha is going to pursue Mr. Mampoul instead of the police, but I'm not so sure. Because I've indicated to you that if he has to sue you 100 million and we give you subsidy, we give you 350 million, that sounds like a subsidy, but actually that takes 60% of the entire budget of the Department of Communication, what we allocate to the DOC. That's not a substantial amount of money, which will then get back to what Ms. Smart was asking. So I would want you to explain that. Chairperson, the post office offices in Fountain, in Mendelin Park, in Rosebank, in Clearwater are much, much different from the post offices in Soweto, in Guguletu, and in others. What informs that? Well, why are they different? If you still a public entity, which you are, because if the minister has played a role there, and then in terms of your issues, and the board was appointed by that, you still partly public entity, despite the fact that you are now entered a terrain of swimming among sharks in terms of the profits and stuff like that, and many others. So what informs the differences? I remember at some point in time you had the new look, and then when the new CEO came, they came with a new look, and then that new look was disbanded, then it came with new branding, you know, from the post office. And I would like to know now what informs the disparities if most of your stakeholders are government departments which actually give you business. And why would you have a beautiful branches in some of these areas, and it's got those ones that I only look at them sometimes, they're not quite exciting. I mean, it's quite good. What makes them to be different? Chairperson, the other issue that I have to check from the is that if you check the salary scales in terms of the report of your GMs and your managing directors and your GEs, like group executive, most of your MDs will move around about 8 to a million to 1.5, stuff like that, and then your group executive will be around about, one of them actually I saw, he says what about 408 to 1250, that, I'm not so sure what informs the disparities between your group executive salary skills and the managing director. What is it because of the entities and whatever that happens? The last two questions, sir, person, is the issue that relates to the losses within the career. Are we still making losses within that area in terms of that, or are we doing any much profit at that particular thing? So, person, it is quite clear that when we want to do the oversight, and we've reported this matter about the temporary staff, the casuals, it is exciting to hear today that actually there are those who have been absorbed into, but the system, the group executive of a human resource, she said that a thousand of them have been absorbed into, that she said that when we met you at that time, that a thousand of them will be now between them and today. How many of you absorbed? Because you see, when we went there, some of them had been casual for almost 10 years, as the members have reported. You know, that's quite sad that it has happened, that it's like that. So I think that we must find a solution. So you must have a closure on this matter. Whether you fire them or you take them into the system, but you must take them, because most of them said they could not even open up their entity, could not open up any accounts because they're taken as casuals, and therefore institutions like your clothing stores, your banks, and this and that can't help them to buy houses or cars because of the situation, and which is something that we need to do to deal with. The point of my authority is asking the relationship now between, because the post-graduate has been put into ICASA. Now there's a perception that actually there's not much that, even in the logo of ICASA does not show anything, you know, about the post office. It's just this old ICASA logo. You know, whether do you feel that you enjoy the same type of respect and then the type of attention you do, or do you think that things have changed? We really want to know, because it helps us to then look at how we can come into intervention. Now, this is the last one that I'm making. It is a debate or a discussion that I think we must take it further. Chairperson, we want to know, what are you? Are you a private company? Are you a public entity? And I'm asking this because you will then have to show us how you're going to be able to achieve universal service obligations at the same time remain competitive and make profit. Because now you have entered the banking sector, the insurance sector, you are retailing, you are selling stationery, you are doing all sorts of things. And at other times, you are now providing addresses, you are providing, you are delivering envelopes, you've got philatelic services there, your stamps, and many other things. So how are you able, in terms of the strategy, how are you going to be able to be able to be competitive and still deliver on the universal service obligation that we expect to? Now, there's a matter that I think, sir, we must see. It might be something that we'll have to look into conscious, because honestly speaking, we can't keep on grandfathering you. The grandfathering policies are not coming to an end. We can't keep on giving you money and you go and enter into commercial interest and other things, and you still a public entity, but at other level you are you've got commercial interest that you do, and unfortunately you come here to account to us, and you outline your strategies, and your competitors are here. They are listening. They are going to deal with you. They are going to block you before you can even implement the strategy. So you must find a way to really decide what you want to be as you proceed. Maybe you must decide in 10 years' time, achieve your investors' obligations, and from then on, request us to consider you to a private company, something like that. I'm not saying something that you must really as a strategy decide what you want to do. Thanks, sir. I'm sorry for taking time. And I must say the report is quite good, but however, I was just pointing out those errors that I think they need attention. Thanks.
They are reporting, not you. I said they are reporting, not you, eh? You've taken 20 minutes of my time, eh? Now I'm just teasing you.
Yeah, I'll be brief, Chair. You mentioned many words like, you know, behavioural patterns and health checks in between unions, but I just want to use the word theft. And I just want to ask you, because, you know, before I came here, I have a folder, you know, with the letters to the editor. I missed my grandson of booties, and, you know, I've missed 5 matinee jackets, and I've never arrived, solved, etc. And so I just want to hear from you, just in between these behavioural patterns and health checks and so on, so that you're doing. What, I mean, I just can't, I mean, we've been to the post office, we've looked at it. How does this happen? I mean, with the technology that you're talking about, how does this theft keep happening? So I just like to really find out, working with the unions, how you're monitoring the use of IT, why there is this theft. Because the link to that is I really do think that your the insurance, the high cost of registering parcels because one wants to avoid behavioral patterns that you're talking about, just needs to be, it's far too high. I mean, it's extremely high for people to pay those costs. Moving along, could you give us some ideas of public information terminals that you've got now, you're having them serviced more efficiently. Have you got any data on how citizens are effectively utilizing the PITs, and to what end? You know, what would that, you've got, I mean, what are they looking for? You know, ID document, what specifically? Because it might be an idea then that we need to make some changes there if you've got some kind of idea of precisely what our citizens need in terms of those terminals. And then just lastly, just briefly, the partnership for social development, how are those, your trial programs, how are they working out, and any plans that you have to roll out further? Thank you.
Thank you so much. I think we'll just finish the subsidy one and then proceed in terms of the others. I think Nick, you started whilst I'm
yes, Chairperson, on the subsidy, I think the cash flow was really, we've just built in the borrowings in the event that subsidy was not renewed. I think what we were trying to do is we have an annual capex spending requirement of 800 to 900 million rand, of which 600 was going to come from operating cash, another 300 million rand coming from subsidy. Now, the question is, if the subsidy was terminated in 3 years, there would be a bridging period until such time as our operating cash flow equals the capital expenditure that we require. So until that sum is reached, we would need to actually borrow a certain amount, but not a very large amount. And in terms of your other question, in terms of the spending, there's a lot of carryover, et cetera, and you're quite correct. We need to focus on managing those bottlenecks in our processes that prevent us from spending the money quicker. And I think it's a combination of, there are some capacity issues, etc. But I think, because it is taxpayers' money, it's very, very important to make sure we do the right thing. So I think that carries with it a certain amount of delay in terms of making sure that it's approved, etc. There's quite a lengthy process that we go through with the department to make sure that the department agrees with the projects on which we spend the money. We do a monthly report to them in terms of exactly what's been spent. We do reconciliation on bank accounts. So we go through a huge amount of reconciliation work. So that's got its own delay. But I think in terms of our processes, we do need to improve it. I mentioned that we re-implemented our SAP system. We're looking at online procurement and ways in which we can speed up that process and making sure that people have the correct authority to enable them to do the job and do the job quickly. So, yes, there's a lot of work going into that, and I would expect to see those improvements coming through shortly. We're not hoarding it. When it does come to an end, that it will last us. We are spending it, but yeah, we're not spending it as quickly as we would like. Thank you.
Thanks. Just to add on that one, and as we move to the next set of questions, it's important to note that the strategy that we're presenting in terms of the rollout deals actually to a greater extent with a comprehensive approach, and that will be rolled out, which basically presents infrastructure development from a multi-purpose perspective that will be able to deliver. And this, to a greater extent, is a strategy that focuses on how we deliver on USO, and we see that as quick as possible in terms of the next few years, we begin to deliver on our obligation. But it's a strategy that also leverages on the investment, in terms of the possibilities from both public and private, and we'll be presenting more and more of that because we've worked quite hard in terms of that strategy, and from an expenditure perspective, that is why we're showing such numbers now, because it's something we know that we'll be capable of doing to deal specifically with the problems of the remote areas. But also, I think it becomes important to note that as part of this and the relationship with the CASA, we basically have had quite a relationship, in terms of the CASA, and I think they'll speak more to that. Even ourselves, the chairpersons of the post office and the CASA, have met. So quite frankly, from our side, we're seeing a relationship that, we're strengthening, and specifically in terms of our USO and the areas that basically we're needing from both sides to be able to help each other, and also taking it further in terms of our plan and other regulatory requirements of our business plan going forward. But I think my colleagues will talk to that. Let me start by apologizing to you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, because I think in the introduction that we was started by Tweaks, we missed to apologize on behalf of our acting CEO, because it was something that we meant to do. She is not well and basically has taken time off because we've really been pushing her. At this point, we actually pardon her in terms of coming, because she's been pushing full flat. And she is a person that, a lot of what we've managed in terms of stabilizing, we accredit and attribute to her, because there's a big role that she has played as far as that is concerned. But I also would like to indicate that the process of the selection of the CEO is on course. It's an amazing process, because we had to go back to looking at the job profile, because we didn't just want to advertise. So we involved a whole lot of parties internally, externally, including the specialists like Drake and Skull, to work with us in terms of coming up with a very clear job profile of a CEO that has been benchmarked in terms of other post office and similar state-owned organizations in our country. And we advertised, got quite a number of adverts coming through, and the process as well involves external parties working with their board committee. And at this stage, we've managed to get to a point of shortlist and basically be presenting to the shareholder the shortlist. So that process is, of course, very transparent, very open process that also focused on the contractual reviews and the specifications at this stage. So we are at this point hoping that very soon, because when we don't appoint, we basically just present our shortlist. as far as the issue around Mr. Manyate, Manda Manyate, the former CEO, yes, you're quite right. When we came here and presented, I mean, in terms of the correspondence, what was coming from the side, their side at the time, the situation has kind of changed since we last met. We had someone served on us from Mr. Manyate, suing the post office to the tune of 274 million rand. And basically where we are at this stage, and you would appreciate that I can't talk much to that because, you know, at this point, substance care is a legal case. But from our side, we basically are making sure, not just with this case, but with all the cases, that we do whatever we can, because we're not going to try we try and make sure that the surplus that the people of the post office work hard for is invested in the obligations in terms of our social and developmental imperatives. So basically we try to make sure that we deal with the cases in the most efficient and appropriate way that is fair and just to all the people concerned. So that's as far as I can say as far as that case is concerned. Yes, ma'am. Actually, one of the reasons we won the JFE, at that time we didn't have the figure because no summons were served on us by either of them. But we did indicate in terms of the contingent liability, we did declare. So that was one of the areas that was picked up because there was, you know, transparency from our side as far as that was concerned. But at this point, we mentioning the figures because we had them. Comment at this stage. I think in terms of the look and feel, and I'm going to open it up to my colleagues to share as far as that is concerned. One of the key areas that we're dealing with in terms of the disparities and the imbalances is specifically part of that. Because the whole issue, I mean, and right now, I mean, we're looking at further work that has been done in as we prepare for the rollout that we were referring to, the strategy that we're presenting, because we even looked at TEMPs, in terms of structures, but now we're looking at a more comprehensive approach that deals with the issue of ensuring that there's equity. But at the same time, there is conformity or aesthetic, you know, a feel that is linked to the context, because your modern structure and sentence might not work well in your rural area, and it's not a situation of, you know, there's glass and sentence and this, you know, it's mainly an aesthetical issue that is adaptable to the cultural environment. So there are also those considerations that we're factoring, but what we are emphasizing at this stage is the issue of functionality, but also at the same time the issue of equity, in the sense that you're not going to put more in one area than the other. So, yes, some of these are areas that we are continuing to work on and are very focused in terms of addressing them. And I'll leave that to others to just add on anything that they would like to on the issue.
Could I suggest, Mariki, would anything you'd like to add from a retail perspective? I think the question was the disparity between urban and rural outlets.
I think the chairperson is quite correct. As part of the rollout plan, it has got three dimensions that are being evaluated in the total rollout plan. Firstly, it's to identify areas where there are new offices. Secondly, it's to identify the areas where post offices are relocated wrongly. It's not in the business center, so it's the relocation. And then the third portion is the upgrading of the existing facilities. So it is a holistic plan, and when we talk about the rollout of new post offices, it means all three areas we're looking at simultaneously.
And this links, Honourable Member, to your question about who we are. It's a very valid question. because as they, and this is where we really need the support. We're very committed to the, you know, because we believe that the footprint of the post office makes it a people's post office. It's a people's entity. And by that we mean that we continue to see ourselves servicing specifically everybody, but also addressing or redressing the imbalances to ensure the mainstreaming of specifically of the poor in terms of the post office. So when we invest in the system to a greater extent, including the PIT questions that are being included, we even including now the e-caters, people who are going to assist from a knowledge and access and information and literacy issues, those members of the community that don't have access. So we're very committed in terms, and in a sense we want to present a model to South Africa that says commercialization and corporatization does not necessarily mean the exclusion. There's no way we could talk about the post office outside of the exclusion of the majority of the people. We talk about a service that basically can show the country in terms of how you can match the two areas. And that's why we're talking about how we're seeing the rollout of the addresses beginning to deal with the issue of the development imperatives, but at the same time contributing to revenue growth. So in a sense, we're looking at matching in that model that deals with the commercial sense, but also bringing in the development. But it's a path that we are watching all the time and monitoring from our side and making sure that we get the support in terms of that. So we continue to be a public entity, and but we will be coming back to you in terms of some of the challenges and where we'll be needing support, whether it's from a regulatory perspective or in whatever form in terms of the partners that are there. So we continue to see ourselves. The issue of the, but at the same time, one thing that we recognize is that we're operating in a competitive environment, one, two. There is no way that we can continue to deal in a capitalist market economy that we can look at dealing with the issues of the USO and other social imperatives if we don't have the cash to inject into that. So it is becoming very important for us to be efficient and ensure that we can generate revenue that we can invest. So it becomes important that we have two wings that begin to let this organization fly. And how we balance those becomes a big challenge across the board. I think the issue of the staff disparities, specifically group exec, I'm going to leave it to my colleagues to answer.
I'm assuming that when you talk about the managing directors, you talk about the non-executive directors, because the salaries that are at about 400,000 that you quoted, senior manager's salary, that's the starting salary for the senior manager, so there's no director earning at that level, unless you talk about the non-executive directors. All our salaries are benchmarked. We have Deloitte doing a market benchmark for our salaries, so the salaries that you see are fully benchmarked for external people.
Okay, I think we move to the next question in terms of the losses and the behavior. I think it's very important to also, honorable member, recognize that that was put in the context of our relationship with the Communication Workers Union that deals with the issue of transformation and the intensification of the anti-corruption drive. Because basically the issues that you're raising of theft are dealing with that. But the approach that we've both taken, which we're very proud of, because in the past we're focusing on who is stealing now and catch that person and do something, which we continue to. But we're recognizing that, you know, this is not a sustainable approach. Something needs to be done that in a more preventative way. And when we're talking about behavioral patterns, we're beginning to say, what makes people behave in this way? And one of the issues that I'm linking to that is what Honorable Member was talking to in terms of the temps. We've recognized, actually, the issue of not confirming people, continuing to bring in labor brokers and permanent temps is a problem for us because you're not getting that commitment and ownership. So you're getting people who basically behave in a way that tomorrow might not be there, I might grab. So part of the issue now, that is why in dealing with it, we thought it was important to bring in the unions, because on our own, we need to all be exposed to this, the flags and feeders. And it is because of that that we conducted jointly the organizational check to the point of even appointing together, you know, those who are going to be providing the service for us. And we keep being briefed as far as that is concerned. And coming back again to the question of spending, because it was through this exercise that we realized also that there was a knee jerk from the board to say, you know, procurement problem, we're not spending. You know, and they were showing us that we've gone the other way in terms of being strict with processes that might also hamper innovation. So basically now what Nick is referring to about the efficiency that allows innovation is basically again where we continue to look at the system. So the ongoing monitoring from our side as a board gives us the space to be able to understand what is happening. And it is because of that now that we're beginning to deal with that and the psyche that we're dealing with. So the issue of dealing with the questions and just to deal also on the casual staff plan, to say that we are still reporting, Honorable Member, on the 206-207. So the figures that mostly we're discussing here are figures, and we met with you still within that 206-207. So we have not presented to you what we have done going forward to a greater extent. So when you're hearing 1,000, you had 1,000. It's because we're still reporting on 206-207. PIT, I think I'll hand over again.
Thank you. I know we did include quite a lot of information on the PITs in the back of your question. I think the usage information, I certainly, we don't have it with us. Does anybody have any details on that?
Maybe I can just comment. We've put a study into the market, some research, because we believe we know what people want, but we've actually asked a research company to go out in the field. They are busy conducting research in the field directly with the customers in those areas to find out what is the type of services, the products, etc., so that we can match it with our perception and then develop the correct mix of products for those markets. We expect that study to be completed by mid-January, so then we'll have the results of that.
Our board member will also add some.
On the issue that was raised on the subsidy and the universal obligation and the rollout, on a light note, I thought that the other members, what they said, they would say, okay, they see the light now, they'll ensure that it's not cut. But let me attempt to see whether we can pursue them. one of the problems in relation to the rollout, it's not necessarily from the post office. When the board inquired about the roll-up, the rollovers, it relates to land acquisition. It relates to the rezoning of the land. It relates to the town planning of the new settlement areas where we are supposed to put this. And therefore, if you take some of these and other related problems, we then realize that even if we can say maybe by 2010 you would like to reconsider, but your own program says maybe by 2014 you have set yourself a date where you want to be in terms of the reduction of poverty and human settlement and so on. So if you are not going to align perhaps this, what we are doing in terms of post office rollout and so on, you may find out yourself that we may end up by that time, but we may be lagging in meeting the obligation of putting one post office at every 10,000. Secondly, I just wanted to say that in relation to the issue of what are we really, it's a question that as a board, you have seen in the presentation that we have stopped and looked at what happened when we tried commercialization. And we have now repositioned the post office to say, if we have to go that route again, what is that it's got to do and what is that we don't have to do?
But certainly, the post office is quite clear that it's at the center of your delivery of integrated services. And that role we don't want to abandon, and that role we can see that it's one that has been put historically on our shoulders. And we hope that as we go towards the point where we'll be rethinking this issue, by that time we'd have really clarified exactly what our role is. But we hope that everyone would appreciate the status that we have taken for ourselves of being our preferred service provider of choice for government and the people of South Africa.
Further questions?
Sir, they did not answer two questions. The one was related to ICASA and the postal relator. I'm not so sure. That's the same question that Ms. Smart asked that I also asked. No, that issue. The issue of the term chaperone is fine. We can leave it at there, but the answer is not satisfactory. It's okay.
Ms. Yengeni and Ben?
Thank you, Chair. In your annual report, page 100, and achieving operational excellence, that's the clarity. Am I be understanding what is here differently than what you meant? Under your BEE, which is the last part, procurement, your objective, increase procurement to black-owned and managed business, total budgeted procurement, is 669 million $. And target is 50%, and then the result is, I don't understand this. Can you explain to me? And in fact, you must tell me that 53% in terms of the companies, how in figures, how many companies have benefited, if I understand it correctly. But just explain to me this 50% and this 53% result, something like that. But what is it? And then I think it's this one. It's an easy question. In 101, page 101, roll out employee health and wellness program, voluntary HIV testing, health workforce, 50% staff tested. That's the target, and then tested. Do you lead by example here? Yes. Any one of you, executive board members, did this? And then reduce. We go back to this achieving to page 100. Reduce crime and fraud prevention. Reduce internal crime and fraud. I think you will help me to understand because I really don't understand your bench. Marking, yes. 10% increase reporting. Results is 20% decrease. 10%, here you have reduced internal crime and fraud, reduced external violent crime. Then you come up with 59%. This 59% decrease, is this a combination of the two that are under objectives? So how do you get to these percentages? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I had quite a number of questions, but they've been taken. I'll only dwell on two questions. I'll firstly have to introduce myself, coming from KwaZulu-Natal, Eshowe constituent office. 195,000 voters, one post office, Eshowe. You have presented a good report, but to me it seems it's urban-based. The poor people in Kanda, if they want to access the post office, they have got to get into a bus 6 o'clock in the morning, 2 hours to Eshowe, and back. The post office is unaccessible. When are you thinking of rolling out, as you had showed us, the strategy to roll out Kanong to Zulen area? Because last time I've said this, from Tugela River, I can tell you I've got the office in Bangeni, Malmoth, Ulundi. Nongom is a big area, so you've got only one office. Second question, is your asset register? Do you have asset register which specifies acquisition and disposal? I'm thinking of the land where you used to have post offices. I know the post offices that have been closed down, that is not in use. Post office like parents, I know that somebody has just moved in selling goats. Hammersberg, North North, Kranskop, Chinese have moved in selling some clothing, but it used to be post offices those. Do you still have them as government assets, or you have just abandoned them and just left them as they are? Thank you.
Thank you so much, Judy. Allow us to answer. I thought the first question on the ICASA, we dealt with it in terms of where I was even relating the relationship, where we even had a meeting with the ICASA as chairs, and also where the executives continue to go. I'm not sure if you wanted more on that. Okay, thanks. I think then we'll deal with these questions and then hand over to Nick.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. In terms of, I think the question on the was it the national the SASA, the was it the national department of social development? I think we can give you an update on that.
On the issue of SASA, if the honourable chair remembers, the key issue that we agreed on was the number of phases that we're going to be engaged on. The first key issue that we need to deal with is assisting SASA with the development of the database management. So all the people, or all the beneficiaries, we will take response, will be custodians of holding all the beneficiaries on behalf of SASA. So we're currently busy building that system. And the idea is for us to be ready come by the end of December, so that January we can put in place the process of re-registering, because currently the database sits in different environments. Some of the information sits with SASA as an agency. Some of the information sits with the CPA, the cash payment organization. So in future, for the cash payment organizations to pay the beneficiaries, they'll have to come through this system, which we will build on behalf of SASA, for them to verify the people. But over and above that, the second phase will be for people when they come and check as to do the stay, am I still alive, a process. They will come into the post office, will agree on whether it will be done twice a year or once a year, on them coming to the post office and saying, I'm alive. The cash payment companies will continue to exist. I think SASA is currently busy with the process of deciding as to who will get what tender. We didn't put a tender for that. So the key thing that we're going to focus on initially is the database management process. And then down the line, we'll then decide as to how do we bring on board the other areas. For example, it's a challenge for them to understand when people are getting paid through banks as to whether the person is still alive or not. So we'll also put processes in place in terms of assisting them on that. So it's going to be on different phases. Some of the things are on a competitive space, and we decided that we'll be able to assist everybody. For example, if a CPC, a cash payment company, gets a tender, they can come to us and say, yes, we'll not pay those people cash. They can come through to the post office and we'll enter into a different arrangement. So the core of the system that we're busy developing for SASA is more for the database and for verification. And we believe that we've gone a long way in terms of being able to deliver on that. and in December we'll start testing together with SASA to see as to whether they're comfortable with what we've built. But it's not just a project that is ours that we can go and run with. It's something that we're doing on behalf of SASA. So that's what the first phase is going to be. And we'll decide down the line on the things that are in a competitive space as to how we'll engage with SASA.
Can I just ask can you give us a detailed written report on this? I think it's one of the most critical areas for pensioners, for poor people who really depend on this money. And I know in my own community, I mean, when there was this conversion to the company, selling to something, this cash payment thing, I tell you the enormous problems we've had for months. The queues, the pressure it had put on us as politicians to deal with it, because the old people, they go there, they sit for long hours, only to find when they get to this computer, they're not on the system, the money's not there, or something wrong with the fingerprint. I mean, you just can't believe the problem. Now, if you're going to be doing this, I mean, it's a huge exercise. As I understand it, SASA is not setting up its own system. Is that what it's doing? It's working on your system.
We're actually developing it because we already have the platform. So
okay.
We're going to work together with them for us to agree on what the requirements should be in the system, because it is a concern for them to that they not all the information sits with them. So we will be custodians, but we'll do it on behalf.
And actual payments, who will do?
No, the payments will still be done. Like I said earlier on, that on the payment side, we didn't tender for cash payment because we feel that even as the post office, we don't do it very well. It's not a competitive space. It's a competitive space. We believe that people should be paid through a bank account. But there's concerns from other old people that they don't want to be paid through a bank account. They want their cash. So if they want to be paid cash, they will be paid by the cash payer. We will pay if a pensioner wants to be paid through a bank account or wants to come to the post office, which any pensioner even today can come to us. If you want to be paid through the post office, you just go to your province or your agency and you fill a form to say, I don't want to be paid as a cash payer anymore. I want to be paid by the post office, and then you can be paid by the post office. But cash payment, we're not going to engage in that business. It is a challenging business and we don't do it very well. So we're getting out of that business.
You see, I mean, take the advantage here. If I take the nature post office, well established, functions normally. But on pension days, those old people standing in the queue, there's not a single bench in the post office, not a single chair. And there's a dedicated counter for that. But I can tell you something, they stand and they stand. It's very basic thing. I mean, I understand the report is impressive. I can see the important things that happen to turn around this organization. But there are certain basic standard things which people are not, I mean, they just don't think about it. So I would want a very detailed report about how much you, I mean, in which sectors or which areas in the country you actually doing payments. And what facilities are being put into place. And what sort of support mechanism I put in place. And in which areas is the cash paymaster that's supposed to be doing the payments? Right? And what you are responsible for and what is SASA responsible for? Because I think there are so many different partners in so many different parts throughout the country, really. There are just too many gaps that things fall through. And you find ordinary and old people battling just to get that money. Because nobody wants to take responsibility. If you could, it doesn't have to be, I mean, you don't have to come and present it, but give us a detailed written report on this issue. Any further questions?
It's not a further question. It was a matter relating to the operating losses pertaining to the courier services that was not dealt with. Thanks, Chair.
Chair, thanks very much. I think the Honourable Member will note the fact that there has been great strides made in that unit to turn it around. The losses in the past 2 years have been in excess of 90 million. And as you've seen in the results there, we've posted the lowest loss that's ever been made done in that environment of 7 million. We're actually expecting that this financial year
we will let work break even or show a minimal profit. But the turnaround is continuing, and we are showing so far some great strides in that regard. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks. We will be dealing now with the questions of the Honourable Member Yengemi.
I think just to clarify some of the, I know it's quite summarised, so it's difficult to say what it is. Just to give you a little bit more detail, the BEE spending, we have a discretionary spending every year of around 1.2 billion rand. When I say discretionary, it's not fixed. So for instance, not salaries or rent or things like that. So where we can influence who we spend it with, we call it discretionary spending. We track that from a BEE perspective. So before any one of our suppliers gets put onto the database, they have to go through certain, we measure their criteria as to whether we classify them as BEE or not. We go through the normal, you know, the things like ownership, all the BEE initiatives they have, and we actually classify them through that process as BEE. And once we've actually got them on the system, we can actually track and pull out reports in terms of the spending that we have on that. And our target, as I say, is 50%, and we've managed to exceed that by 53%. So a big portion of our spend is spent on triple BEE and SMMEs. The question on the crime and fraud, the targets there that we have, we split it between internal and external. So we have internal crime and fraud and external. We track them individually. So the target for internal crime was a 10% increase in reporting. We put a lot of efforts into making sure people were anonymous, they could phone in, et cetera, when they believed there was a problem. And we wanted to, we had a KPI where we wanted to see a 10% increase in number of cases actually reported. But at the same time, we wanted to see as a result of that, we wanted to see the losses go down. So we tracked the RAND value of the losses as well. So, and the same on the external side, we wanted to see a 5% increase in reporting and a 5% decrease in losses. Now, as a result, you can see the results there. 10% increase in reporting, we actually had a 20% decrease, so it went the other way. So, you know, where we didn't achieve it, we still obviously detailed there. There was, instead of a 10% decrease in losses, there was a 9% decrease. So we're pretty much there in terms of that one. We had a 4% decrease in external time reporting. So the reporting side, the efforts we've done to encourage reporting don't seem to be working. However, the actual losses have actually declined. So there's a 59% decrease in external losses as a result of external fraud and theft. So I think a lot of the physical things that we've been putting in place, like making sure the cash is, there's less cash balances in the post offices overnight, making sure we've got physical barriers in terms of CCTV cameras, all those sort of things, they are having an impact. Although we still need to make sure that we actually encourage people to report things in a little bit more detail. Then I think the question on the outlets. In your packs there's a detailed rollout plan for 07-08. And if you look, we're actually targeting for 85 new outlets countrywide, of which 70 will be going in underserviced areas and 15 in serviced areas. And if you look at the sort of provincial breakdown, the highest number, 19, is going into KwaZulu-Natal, followed by 17 in the Eastern Cape. So in terms of our rollout initiatives, hopefully we'll be targeting those areas which specifically are concerned about. And then lastly, on the fixed asset register, yes, we do have a fixed asset register. All land and buildings which we have title to are valued at year end and are included in our fixed asset register in our balance sheet. In fact, the value of land and buildings at the end of last year was 690 million. So that would include not only the buildings which we own, but the land as well, which is separately valued and accumulated. So even though there's not a post office potentially on it, if we have title to it, it is valued and included in our asset register.
But now the maintenance on those buildings, some of them are standing there like I've described. What do you do about it?
I think that we've identified that, Honourable Member, as an issue. And at this point, we're busy finalising the tender that's dealing with facilities management in its entirety, because there was an issue of a centralised approach in terms of dealing with. So we've consolidated that because it also involves quite a number of amounts of money. We had to take some time in terms of understanding what's happening with that tender. So those, because we manage that, there are specifically remote areas issues that we were having in terms of monitoring that properly and maintaining. So that's an area that we're specifically finalizing, you know, the appointment of the company that will be dealing with that. We going back to the question of the HIV and AIDS, and I want to leave it because this is one of the programs that is very actually excited in terms of what has happened and the way we've dealt with it, and I'll hand over.
With your permission, Chairperson, before I go to the issue of HIV and AIDS, I just want to try once more to answer the question on casualization with the hope that I can satisfy that question. For this year, we have managed to fill in 357 positions within retail just within the first 4 months of this year. We have currently advertised 700 positions within retail. We have converted 357 positions within May. Now, these are positions which were occupied by what we call permanent part-timers. These are people who would be working 3 hours, some of them 4 hours during peak hours. We also have what we call S32s. These are just contractors. With no, the PPTEs, the part-timers would be having a permanent contract with the post office. The S32s would be people who just have a contract, they're not full-time employees of the post office. We have managed to absorb most of the S32s. We have very, very few, a negligible number. But then the other categories, labor brokers, you would see that our labor broker, the finances or the training on labor brokers hasn't gone down significantly. And the reason for that is that we're doing a lot of training. And when our permanent employees go for training for that particular time, we bring in casuals. We also bring in casuals during when the volumes go up. So it's very difficult to have permanent employees there because it's only at that particular time when you use, when you have high volumes where we use labor brokers. So in as much as we're converting within mail where you can predict how many people you want and what time, within the mail business there are areas where you can't do away with labor brokers. Okay, that's as far as casuals are concerned. Coming to the issue of voluntary counseling, in fact, we call it VCCT, which is Voluntary Confidential Counseling and Testing. Almost all our executives were tested, including the CEO. In fact, we published that in our internal communique. At the moment, we've got 54.5% of our employees tested. That's close to 9,000 employees, and they've all gone through a confidential counseling, pre-test and post-test counseling. We're forming a support group. We'll be launching this on the 8th day, on the 1st of December, where some of the people who have been tested positive have actually come out and said we want to have dedicated support for people living with HIV because we've encouraged employees to come out and be tested and know their status. So what they were asking was, what does the company then help us to stay healthy? So through the support group, we can understand exactly what people living with HIV need, what type of support, and with dedicated finances and resources to assist those employees. We also, within with the wellness program, have an employee assistance program. We've counseled at least 4,000 employees with all kinds of problems, some of them due to trauma, some of them family problems and so forth. Every month we've had some form of preventative program handling different topics like cancer, eye tests, hypertension and so forth, and that's an ongoing preventative program. But the executives themselves, like on the wellness days, they actually go out and they address employees if their tests, they lead, by example, by being the first ones to be tested so that the employees know that they are part of the program but also support the program. I hope I've answered that adequately.
very well. It's very clear. The only answer that is that I'm not happy about is the one of this BEE. Because you are saying you don't have a fixed budget. But if and here, there's total budgeted. There's a certain figure which is for total budgeted, 2006-2007. And what I wanted to know is that how many, in terms of figures, people who have benefited in this 353, how many people, how many companies have benefited? So I don't think I get you well, really.
Can I just ask one more question also? Because when we again, it's just a lunch for all of us, so you're all invited to join us for lunch. What training is offered to your frontline staff in terms of customer service, customer care? You see, I'm concerned about an ordinary person's day-to-day experience of the post office. Now, when I go to the Cape Town post office here, it's clean, it's efficient, there's clear demarcation of lines, you get quick service, somebody smiles at you, and you can come out of there. But I don't think that's every person's experience. If I talk about my own community, I can tell you something. A skill part moves faster than some of your staff members there in the back. You go and collect a letter because you've got a slip. You wait. Now, that's the ordinary person's experience. That's what concerns me. I make a post of going to the post office every month to pay my account. I stand myself in the queue because I want to experience. I could send somebody from the office to do it, but I go myself. For 3 months, I stopped going. Because I know I'm going to lose my temper. I'm talking of an established community. Malaysia is well established. There are 2 post offices there. It's not good. And at one point, I did raise the measure. I said, look, I'm a member of parliament. I'm not happy with the service. The lady there says, I don't work for government. I don't work for your government. Just that, I don't work for your government. You must learn to be patient. So I want to understand, we're looking at things as a whole. I can't hold you responsible for what happens in Malaysia, but I think the experiences are important. What kind of training are we giving people at ground level?
Thanks so much. I think we'll basically just finalize the first question because I think I would like to conclude. To focus more time on the issue that is just raised, Honourable Chair. I think if we can deal with the question, and I think what we can do to assist even further with the question of the Honourable Member on the BEE is to later provide the information that we might not be having in terms of the specifics of what she's requiring on that, because it's an important question. So we'll make sure that we provide those numbers in terms of specifically to be with us at this stage. I think let's address, this is one area, Honourable Members, because Honourable Chair, what you're raising has been raised by the Portfolio Committee members, not once to us. It's an area that we're concerned about. We are responsible for what is happening in terms of Lenasia. We're responsible for what's happening at Shaw. So it's something that we take very seriously. It's a big concern, and that is why from our side we basically needed the cooperation of the unions, because we believe that it's an area that requires such effort from our side that we do not want any sort of intervention that we come up with to be seen, to be contested unnecessarily. That together, let's agree what is acceptable. Because the approach that we are having to bring is not a facelift. It's a radical approach. That's why we're saying in terms of the infrastructure, we're putting better infrastructure, we're putting better conditions of employment, the post office in terms of the industry. We have better conditions, comfortable. We even go to the point of covering the third pregnancy in terms of, I mean, which, you know, we in the industry is not. So basically we're trying to do everything to make people happy, but we're continuing to be challenged as far as the customer service is concerned. So we would like to just indicate that it is a challenge that we also realize from our side, but I'll ask our colleague, Ms. Chumara, to basically take you through, I mean, some of the training programs that we're focusing on. But what we would like in the previous meeting, we talked in terms of the continuous visits by the portfolio committee members. What we're suggesting from our side coming to this meeting that we would like to also develop some formats in terms of the issues to be ticked, you know, what was that experience about? Because we want to turn this into a joint effort where we begin, because we try in some areas, we're making strides, but we find that in others it continues, you know, to be an issue. So basically we need to help each other in identifying these areas for us to be able to deal with them. And out of this format, we even, you know, last week, this week, where we're sitting with the executives, from the board side to sort of look at how do we directly, because we didn't want plans, we didn't want stories, we didn't want, you know, theory. We want to know how are we dealing, to the point that as a board, we are coming up with what we call a branch of the quarter. I mean, the best branch, you know, because we don't even say an annual thing. Quarter by quarter, let's see. And how do we incentivize? We're going to the point of looking at how we incentivize. That's how desperate we are as far as this issue is concerned. But we also have realized that the link with the training side becomes important. So there's a whole motivational issue in terms of the motivation of the staff that we're recognizing we needing to do in dealing with this, because it goes beyond some of the efforts that we do. But we would like an approach out of this that basically we collaborate with the portfolio committee in terms of this feedback that is more focused and targeted. And I'll ask you, Mera, to say more.
Can I say that, look, I don't think we need to go into a long thing now. We can chat over lunch. What will help us? If you can prepare a questionnaire quite soon. I mean, next week, MPs go out on recess. We will distribute it to every member of parliament. Say, go to your post office, fill in this questionnaire, and just return it to you. Offhand, you'll get 400 people, or let's say everybody doesn't reply, but at least you'll get 200 to 300 responses from members of parliament on what's the state of play in the post office. I think it will be very useful information, and we can talk about that over lunch. We don't have to go into the details now. But I'm concerned about this area. All right.
Okay.
We are now going to the old assembly dining hall, and we've got lunch there at 12:30. Your team is welcome. Join us, and you still got a question? Okay.
Again, you know, this is an old question of a postal agency. We're in the poor and the rural area where they need the services most. There is none other than collecting post and sending it vis-a-vis the city. Now, one of my previous chairmen asked that question. When you say post office, what is it that you visualize to see in that place called a post office? You know, it all emanates from the cost of a PIT machine. And it ranged from 70,000 to 110,000 to, we just gave up. Surely you have to get to a point when we visualize, we can see, we'll have a copy machine, we'll have a fax machine, we have in a post office, including a post office. Are you working towards something like that? That we can see that. And we said it must be miserable to say, we've rolled out from now on, this will be the model. We can see, we can start in KwaZulu-Natal, first 25, you know, those kind of things. But it can't be forever. As long as I remember, postal is a bare building, deliver, take letters, collect it, and that's it. For the poor people, then when it comes to the big post office, it costs them up to 200 rand just to go and get their services.
Good. You want to answer now?
No.
Can you give him the lunch, answer over lunch?
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson and the Honourable Members. We just want to also leave on a good highlight of our role in Africa in terms of the continent. We're very excited in the year we're reporting on in terms of having worked with the SAPOA within the region and also within the continent in bringing the Universal Postal Union Congress, which is coming for the first time to Sub-Saharan Africa, which will be held in August next year in Kenya. We've supported Kenya, and we provide the secretariat for Kenya in terms of this activity. And we're very, very excited, and we'll be presenting it in terms of the plan, preparations, and also the Africa strategy. So we're quite excited in terms of our role, because we've indicated the challenges of 1 to 50 and 1 to close to 100, and we believe that there's a role that we can play, and already we're seeing the benefits of what we're trying to do. We even together launched a postal stamp in terms of preparation for the UPU Congress. So we're quite excited on that, and we would really like your support in terms of ensuring that we together make a success of this Congress.
Thanks for an impressive report. I must say it's a very impressive report, and keep up the wonderful work. Now, when are you printing a stamp for the new chairperson?